Hello, my name is Olivia Harding, and I am the host of Folk Files, a podcast that explores the tangled history of folk songs. Every month, I choose a topic to dive into for about 20 to 30 minutes. The subject of each episode could be a song. In the case of Shady Grove, a lot of people believe that it is a later version of the English folk song Matty Groves, but it's not that simple. A general topic. The main theme that I saw while researching folk songs about birds from all over the world is that many of them include nonsense syllables meant to represent the bird songs. Or a question that I want to answer. There has never been any real question that Black people were central to the development of this musical style. So why do we still picture white men hauling on the rope when we think of sea shanties? Folk Files is available everywhere you listen to podcasts. Press play and join me on a journey through the origins of murder ballads, sea shanties, rebel songs, and other music that has withstood the test of time.
Have you heard the news? Basic Folk is now an official production of The Bluegrass Situation. We're leveling up on our folk pod game with our besties at BGS with a new logo, theme song, and a brand new attitude.
That's right, except I have the same bad attitude as last year. And our honest conversations with folk musicians continue to dignify under-the-radar roots musicians.
2025 is off to a great start with episodes featuring Jerry Douglas.
Every 15 to 20 years in bluegrass music, there is a renaissance period, and I believe we're in one right now.
Lutalo.
The act of writing and creativity is my meditation practice.
And Carolyn Kendrick.
The most important thing is, like, how do we try to mitigate harm?
Find us where you get your shows or at thebluegrasssituation.com. Thanks for listening and welcome to Basic Folk.
Hi, and welcome to this bonus episode of Basic Folk. I'm your host, Cindy Howes. Thank you for joining us today. Basic Folk is a podcast featuring honest conversations with folk musicians produced by The Bluegrass Situation. Today is a bonus. We are featuring our very good friend, Mary Sue Tuohy of SiriusXM's The Village. She's being inducted into the Folk DJ Hall of Fame tomorrow night, and we wanted to celebrate by having a conversation all about MST, Mary Sue Tuohy. Before we get into that, I wanted to talk about the best way to stay in touch with Basic Folk is to sign up for our monthly newsletter, which you can do at the link in the show notes, or you can sign up at basicfolk.com. It's a once-a-month email that lets you know what's going on with the podcast, who's been on, who's coming up. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Blue Sky. You can find links to all of our social media at the link in the show notes, or you can check out basicfolk.com. We're also a listener-supported podcast, and we rely on listener contributions in order to keep on making this podcast. If you'd like to contribute, that would be awesome. basicfolk.com/donate, or you can grab that link once again in the show notes. All right, let's get into this. This is going to be so fun. SiriusXM's folk radio programmer Mary Sue Tuohy has not had a straight career path, but it's certainly been adventurous. Mary Sue, who, as I mentioned, is about to be inducted into the Folk DJ Hall of Fame, has held many different jobs over her life, most notably as a touring singer-songwriter and as a beloved folk radio programmer, host, and active community member. It all began in a vibrant musical and creative home in Aberdeen, New Jersey, with fond memories of family gatherings filled with guitars and banjo, laughter, and a distinctive 70s aesthetic. Mary Sue reflects on how her father's love for folk music has shaped her own artistic journey. We dive into how his favorite music, from Joan Baez to the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, have resonated throughout her life. As a seasoned musician and now a prominent figure in the radio world, Mary Sue discusses her transition from performing artist to radio programmer at SiriusXM, where she currently manages The Village Folk Radio Channel, along with several other channels. She emphasizes the importance of connection in radio, both with the audience and the artists she's showcasing, highlighting how her background as a musician allows her to curate a unique listening experience. Her passion for folk music and her commitment to uplifting diverse voices within the genre shine through as she shares insights on compassion, community, and the healing power of music. Throughout our conversation, Mary Sue's authenticity and warmth are evident as she navigates topics like her hobbies outside of music, the significance of compassion in her work, and her recent induction into the Folk DJ Hall of Fame. We also touch on her thoughts about the Bob Dylan movie and engage in a fun lightning round where she shares her favorite songs and memorable moments from her career. Okay, let's get into this conversation. Mary Sue Toohey is a huge supporter of the Basic Folk podcast. We so appreciate everything that she does for us and for all of the folk community. So thanks to Mary Sue for appearing on Basic Folk. And let's get into it. Mary Sue Toohey on Basic Folk. Mary Sue Toohey.
Hey.
Welcome. Thank you for being here.
So glad to be here. And it's an honor to be on your podcast. I've been an admirer for years.
I know. I have been reaping the rewards of your admiration. You've been such a huge supporter of Basic Folk. So this is like a full circle moment.
I am way on the Basic Folk boat. Long may it sail.
Mary Sue, we're going to get into your life here if you're ready for that.
I think I am.
Okay. You've had a really interesting and wild life. And it all started in Aberdeen, New Jersey. Sounds like you were surrounded by music being played, music being listened to in the house and also at church. Lots of creativity. Can you set the scene for what music and creativity looked like for you growing up?
Okay, so just imagine this, like a living room packed with people, a bunch of guitars all going at the same time, voices raised, a 1970s sort of red shag rug that had yellow and orange in it, a fire going in the fireplace. And like little kids, like singing along and then slowly falling asleep on the shag rug, you know, as the, you know, the beer is flowing and the songs are being sung. And those are really special memories. I really enjoy that. We had nothing else to do. It was New Jersey before Starbucks, before cell phones. Couldn't get to New York. So we just played songs in the house and that's what we did. Oh, and banjo. We had banjo, too.
Your dad was playing music growing up. And I believe, is your dad still around?
He is.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. You said, he's the first artist I came to know. Sounds like a pretty special thing, having your dad perform music. Looking back, and also a huge music fan, you were digging into his vinyl collection. Looking back, how has his relationship with music as a player and as a music listener helped shape the type of player and listener that you have become? Because you, Mary Sue, are also a musician.
Well, you know, I mean, he's always loved folk music. And so his collection, Joan Baez, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, John Denver, Peter, Paul and Mary, you know, and the list goes on. But that was kind of like the core. For him to see me talking with Joan Baez, talking with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, you know, talking with members of Peter, Paul, and Mary, I actually got to meet all three of them in my life, which is really amazing. Yeah, that was cool. That he's absolutely shaped it. And I'm very grateful. Like, and you know, actually it'd be kind of interesting to hear who his musical influences from his parents and grandparents were, because how did he get into this music? That would be a great question for him. Yeah. Mm. Oh, he loves Emmylou Harris. He loves Emmylou Harris. And I introduced them once. His eyes were like as big as plates. He was just like,
oh, wow.
He's great. And music is a lifeline for him. It really is. I mean, he's 85. The music is the thing that really keeps him going. He's singing to, you know, kind of hospice folks in the continuous care place where he's living. He plays every day. He's constantly pointing to the music, and that's just a great way to be at 85.
So what about radio? Like, what type of role has radio played throughout your life before you started actually working in radio?
Do you know, growing up in New Jersey, you know, it's hard not to have listened to WNEW, WPLJ, all of these stations coming up, you know, definitely way into pop. I loved when a DJ would come on and talk to me like a normal person and laugh. And those two things, I was like, that really made me feel connected to them. And it stuck with me. Then I was like, you know what? I never even thought I'd ever be on the radio. That wasn't even on the sort of radar. But now, like, I see that as super important, like, connection. And I remember that growing up when I did hear that, I was like, that's what's cool.
How has working in radio changed your, like, initial relationship to the medium? Like, can you still listen to the radio?
Oh, I love radio. And I feel like it's very much broadened my love. You know, when I stepped into SiriusXM, SiriusXM is an interesting platform because everybody's there, everybody, like politically, musically, every sort of story hypothetically is there. And so when I stepped in, I had my own little experience. And then I looked around, and I was like, holy smokes, this is huge. And infinite, you know, like the stars of the sky. And so I just sort of like got really kind of quiet and kept listening to my colleagues. And we do weekly air checks on all these different channels. So I'm constantly listening to music I wouldn't naturally listen to. And that is mind expanding. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I love being expanded beyond my own predilections.
Man, that's great. You have not had a straight career path. I will not list all of the jobs that you have held, but I will give a couple of shout outs. You've worked some nonprofit jobs, worked for Greenpeace, for a holistic veterinarian. You were a professional touring musician. You ran your own publicist house for musicians. And you now hold the title of modern folk radio legend. Could you have... Could you have ever imagined yourself where you are at this point in your career? Like, what's been your relationship to the idea of a career?
You know, that's a really good question. One time I was talking with my brother and he's like, you know, you're really not about the money, are you? And I was like, no, I guess I'm not. And you know, I was just trying to pursue kind of artistic pathways, helping the planet sort of pathways, helping dogs and cats. And somehow, like, it all relates. It's all together. I don't really see them as apart.
Is there a way you could expand on that a little bit more, like how you found it to all be related? I totally agree with you.
I think it kind of actually kind of distills down to compassion, like really getting into what it means to be, or at least try to be, a compassionate person. So caring for music, caring for animals, caring for the planet, like Greenpeace. I'm into native plants now. Like, that's a kind of a Greenpeace move in a way, just maybe less radical. So that I think it's all expressions of compassion, really. And thank you for helping with that, because I didn't really see all the connection there. But now I do.
That's beautiful. I love that answer. Okay, so you came to play folk music. You have three albums that are out. Your career, let's say, was from the early-ish 90s until the middle-ish O's. So you landed on folk music because you were familiar with the genre. So back in 2004, I'm not holding you accountable to anything you said in 2004, but you had a pretty great definition of folk music. You said folk music is lyric oriented. It's about people and grassroots. I think people are attracted to this type of community music, music that is by and for the people.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome. So what do you think of that description 21 years later? Like, how has your time and experience in the folk genre changed what exactly you define as folk music?
It's already riddled by trying to define it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's like, you tell people, I define folk music, and then a huge brawl breaks out. but, you know, different people have different approaches to definition of folk music, and I'm definitely not a purist. I have a wide expanse embracing view of folk music, and every day that I kind of put my arms around it, I think, okay, what am I missing? What do I need to reconsider? And so actually a lot of where I stand now, I'm not only looking forward into the many different kinds of folk music, and man, it is awesome. Like, I just, you know, I think globally with it, you know, how much music do I get to listen to and how much do I don't even know about yet? You know, hopefully I'll get to listen to it in my lifetime, right? And then I want to look back to all the stuff that was labeled something else and say, wow, that was probably folk music. Like Paula Cole, you know, her hits, like, wow, that actually could live in our world now. And back then it didn't. What's up with that? Why? Why is that? And then, you know, I want to look at a whole bunch of different records and recordings and just music history and just sort of reconsider all of it, really.
That's really cool because you have plenty of time.
One day, I hope so, yeah.
I actually wanted to dig into one of your songs, Saint Cecilia, from your first record. You wrote it, it's beautiful. You wrote it in gratitude to the patron saint of music, Saint Cecilia. It's one of the first songs that you ever recorded. And of the process, you said, I began to realize that when you connect into the artistic realm, you connect into the divine. Right on. How do you now, with your work in folk radio, connect with the divine via the artistic realm?
Oh, I love that. So I was just talking with Amy Helm. I know you had her on the show.
Divine indeed.
And, you know, just had, you know, a couple of really neat moments with her. And one thing we were talking about is like the way all of these touring musicians are going around the world, sharing their music in these, you know, venues and so forth. I just sort of imagine all of these concerts and live music experiences healing the world. And all at once. And so as the world, you know, in moments also is falling apart, there's all these musicians and other arts too, but musician and live performance really does have a special energy that I think is kind of keeping everything together and on a healing path. It may not feel like it, but I really think the musicians are doing a special job that some of them know they're doing it and others may not, but they're still doing it.
That's beautiful. Mary Sue, your singing voice is a very impressive soprano.
Oh my God. I can't sing like that now. I don't sing like
I was like, whoa. Like the bravery it takes to sing, because I can sing soprano too, but I don't want to. Don't make me do it. I'm like that Kristen Wiig character in Saturday Night Live where I'm like, don't make me sing. But anyways, back to your soprano singing voice. Holy cow. It made me want to know, what you think, like, how do you think of your two voices, your singing voice and your radio voice?
Yeah, really different. You know, singing is an instrument, you know, and it's learning to play an instrument that doesn't have keys. It's like fretless, you know, and being able to support it. But the thing is it's not just about the voice. It's all about the heart. And so, you know, my voice has changed as I got older and getting older. And as a radio voice, you know, I feel like it's super important to still connect with the heart. Even though my voice may not be what it was, I feel like there's the authenticity is still there. That's the one thing I really try to hold on to is, you know, making sure when I'm, you know, presenting and that I'm really connecting to what I'm saying, you know, and making sure mm-hmm. that the heart space is open and flowing and real. So a lot of times, if you listen to the show, it may not be polished perfect, but that's not the point. It's not the point at all, you know? So yeah, it's about passion and compassion, both.
My gosh, your answers are great. I'm having a great time. This is giving me life.
Nice.
You started your radio career in the mid-2000s. You were doing your own music. You were running a publicity company for musicians. And you eventually would get hired full-time at Satellite Radio, which is now known as Sirius XM. You were someone that had experienced career changes previously, but, like, this seemed like a pretty big change for you. So, like, you're going to Folk Alliance, which is the folk music conference that happens every year, and all of a sudden you're not an artist, you're a radio programmer. What was it like to embrace radio fully and leave your guitar at home and kind of let go of your professional music career?
You know, the part I missed the most about that, especially when it was happening, was all the folk community I got to see when I was touring. I love the people and talking with people and connecting. However, this medium of radio, once I started getting my feet wet in it, I was like, wow, this is so freaking cool. And it's a lot of work. You know this, and I know this. It's a lot of work. Everyone's like, oh, sure, radio show. And then they start making radio, and they're like, oh, my God, it's real work.
Yeah, it's a grind.
But I love libraries. I love, you know, the fact that I really can't know it all. I love that because there's sort of a challenge there. There's a, you know, it's something that you can only try to embrace, but you'll never get it all. You just won't. And so, I don't know. Somehow that inspires me.
I thought you were going to say the thing that you missed the most was the jams.
No. I was never good at jamming, you know.
Not a jammer.
Far more talented artists than, you know, what I was doing back then. And it's such an honor and privilege, really. And, you know, when I bring in all of these artists into the studios and I hear them and I see what they're doing, and I'm just in awe, like literal awe of what they're able to do. And, you know, how articulate they are. I mean, they're just flying at a whole different level. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that part. I really love to, you know, just completely try to understand just how great they are, you know.
Mm-hmm. When you became a radio programmer, I'm wondering, like, how your experience as a musician impacted your work as a programmer in terms of, like artistically, perhaps.
Oh, totally. I think that actually set me apart in so many ways because I came at the whole music programming as a musician. And that's completely different, you know, in terms of thinking in terms of narrative, thinking in terms of, you know, do these songs actually go together musically, you know, and then, or not intentionally, you know, like what is it that makes a program work and balance, also balance. It's all about like presenting everything, you know, not in, at least in the case of radio. And what The Village is about is, you know, it does present as much as I possibly can stuff into one channel. Kind of like a massive burrito.
Being inducted into the Folk DJ Hall of Fame is not your first experience with receiving a major accolade. The Village Folk Show won a Gracie Award in 2016. And from what I understand, you actually walked a red carpet.
That was fun.
How do you feel about this kind of attention? Like, are you going to give a speech at the award show?
I don't know. I don't know if they'll allow us that kind of time. But I will say this. I think that the folk music in general, and this is across board, you know, anything associated with the folk music, you know, why not have it on the red carpet? You know, I'd love to see our Grammy artists walking the red carpet and giving them all the attention and, you know, joy for all the work that they've done.
Those people have outfits.
Yes.
Sierra Farrell has outfits that we need to see.
Yeah. I'd love to see what she's up to always. I think it's a good thing. It's not easy because, you know, kind of suffer a little bit of a admittedly imposter syndrome. Like, really? Mm. But I think, you know, there's so many people who have done so much work. Some will get recognized. Some deserve it. And hopefully they will get recognized. I just want to say that there is a nomination process. If you think there's a DJ out there that should be recognized, go to the Folk Alliance, folk.org, and you can nominate them. Because I do know there's a huge sea of DJs that deserve lots of recognition that, you know, may not be on the airwaves now. That's okay. You can nominate them. And
let's get Brad Kolodner in there. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing some really great work. All he has to do is put 20 years in. And I think he's on that track. I do really appreciate him.
Me too. Yeah, he's a great DJ and a really good buddy.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance to meet Brad Kolodner.
Where is he now? Is he on Folk Alley?
He's on Folk Alley and he's on a station in Baltimore.
He used to be, I think, on Bluegrass Country.
He's also on Billboards in Baltimore.
Nice.
He is Mr. Baltimore, Brad Kolodner.
Charm City.
Hi, Brad, if you're listening, we're big fans. Big fans over here. Brad Kolodner, amazing banjo player, community leader, and folk DJ.
Do you know another DJ that I really take inspiration from is Jesse Scott, WMOT, down in Nashville.
Okay.
She and I were
right on.
Like, worked at XM together for years, and to see her in action, she's amazing. She's like a force.
Right on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of being cool, I want to talk about not caring about being cool. In reading your description of the 930 Club in DC, which you called a club way cooler than I am, it made me think that you do not seem to care about being cool or being the hippest person in the room. What's been your lifelong experience with being cool, like within yourself and then like within other people? Like, how do you act if you find yourself in front of a really cool person?
You know, and I have really been hanging out with some most excellently cool people. Oh my God. The main thing is people are people at the end of the day. They have breakfast like you and I, you know, they, you know, the last time I was talking with Kenny Loggins, like last month, I was like, okay, I think we can wrap this so you can have lunch in about, you know, 20 minutes. And he's like, right on. And I was like, yeah. And then I was talking with Mary Chapin Carpenter. I was like, yep, we're going to be done so you can get a dog walk in before the sun sets. And she's, you know, she loves her dog.
Right.
So she's like, yay. Right. So people are people. You know, as cool as they are, at the end of the day, they need to eat. They need to walk their dog. They, you know, open the mail, whatever. They're just people like you and me. And if I can connect to that you and me sort of regular people mode and not necessarily not be respectful of their most excellent coolness. I try to always be respectful, especially when talking with you know, like major people, right?
Yeah.
But also, you know, like I've talked with Carly Simon. I told her about my dog being a basset hound, and she was like, I love basset hounds. I'm like, of course you do, Carly. So that connection of just human to human, really important, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you have that in anything, you know, but radio in particular, I think it's super important because you're only working with a voice, two voices, potentially, maybe more. And then the medium is very, very intimate. It's right into somebody's ear and mind and heart. That's it. You know, there's no real visual. You know, you're working with music and it's transformative. It can change in color a day completely.
Since you and I have been working together, you've been, as we've mentioned, very, very supportive of Basic Folk and a huge advocate. I've really come to understand that you are really all about lifting up next generations of musicians and broadcasters and podcasters, as well as those minorities that have been made to feel like they didn't belong in folk music. How has your programming and approach to your work changed because of those efforts?
Oh, I'm a better person for it because I learn all the time. I bring in, you know, artists and basically not only bring them in to perform, but bring in maybe two artists to talk with each other. And I step back and play a producer role and I just listen and learn. And I learn stuff that's just so beyond what my world, you know, before that moment had. And to me, that's just gold. It's complete gold to go beyond what you knew and learn more about that human experience that we're all sort of trying to understand. Yeah.
You're based in Washington, D.C., and you have a lot of hobbies. I will name check a couple of them. Native plants that you showcase on my favorite Instagram show, MST in the Meadow, which I just named. Machine knitting, also a recent favorite hobby that you've been showcasing online. You have a very busy work life. You program like 25,000,000 radio stations. You are a very active member of the folk community. Music, 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 music. How does having interests outside of music and your work help you be a better programmer, a better broadcaster, and community member?
Oh, yeah, so important. First off, I just made this. Look at that.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that cool? It's a pattern that came from a West Virginia machine knitter, Shirley, who gifted me one of her machines. It's a tremendous.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, totally.
Wow. Wonderful work.
This is going to Amy Helm. Yeah, I finally finished it. Now I just got to put it in the mail, along with some native plant seeds.
Of course.
But I think the, you know, having, you know, hobbies and first off, like, you know, you and I and anybody who's in radio are working their butts off. You know, people think it's an easy job. It's not so easy. So having something outside that work realm is a kind of a work rest in a way to get, you know, I'm not really good at resting, kind of a terrier, always moving. But, you know, to have a rest from the music and doing a little bit of machine knitting or gardening helps bring a bit of quietude. It also can bring people into my life that normally wouldn't be in my life, that are not musicians, you know, and talking to them about music is actually fascinating because they're like, we're inside baseball people, right? With the music and kind of hearing their perspectives on some of the music that that I enjoy is fascinating. And then, you know, I learn even more. You know, I was talking with Sam Dorge of the USGS Bee Inventory and Monitoring Lab.
Oh, of Sam.
Sam. And he loves Bulgarian folk music. And I was like, tell me more. Tell me more.
Go on.
Yeah, go on. Exactly. He sent me a couple links. Hopefully, you know, we'll have a show before you know it with him. But it was awesome, you know, awesome to just get beyond, again, beyond what I know. Okay, let's go further. Let's see how far this brain can go in all directions, right?
So I just want to say, by the time that this episode is going to be out, the Oscars will have not happened. So feel free to speculate. What did you think of the Bob Dylan movie?
Oh, I loved it. I really did. We had the honor of working with Elijah Wald, and he helped put together a almost 4-hour listening guide, which is on the app. And that, it was super cool to work with him because the movie is based loosely based on his book, Dylan Goes Electric. And then, of course, read his book. The book's great. And when I sat down in the theater to watch the movie, I just love that it took me there. It was a movie. You know, of course, there were some historical inaccuracies. I'll let other people list those, you know, because they're all over social media talking about that. But I loved how it made me feel, like I was there. And so the directors, the producers did their job. Casting, great. Love Timothy. Is it Timothée? How do you say his name in French?
I've heard Timothy.
Okay. Okay. That. And then Monica. Ed. I mean.
She was so wonderful.
Oh, my gosh. I keep reading articles and how, like, Joan Baez had said, hey, when she heard this movie is being produced, she said, anybody who wants to talk with me, you're welcome to. And Ed Norton did. He was the first. No surprises there, of course. And then Monica was like, well, maybe I should. And then she did. And it turns out they were both dancers, both have Mexican heritage. There's all these connections between the two. And I love Monica's voice. I mean, of course, nobody can be Joan, right?
But for sure.
But Monica really knocked, I think, a home run.
Yeah,
totally cool. I loved it.
I hope it wins some awards.
I hope so. What did you think?
I loved it. My heart was in my throat the whole time. I was like whispering. I was sitting next to my wife. I'm like, that's Odetta.
I love it. Yeah, it was like that. It was really cool. Just did. I would watch it again and maybe even again and again.
Yeah, I would watch it maybe again and again and maybe even again. One more time. All right, MST, lightning round. Here we go. Who is the first person that you ever interviewed on the radio?
It might have been John Prine.
Oh, might as well start big.
I know. That's been my life, really. Like, go do some interviews. Here's John Prine.
John Prine. Here you go. Who is your favorite radio DJ growing up and why?
I think the why is somebody who would talk to me, not talk at me, and make me laugh and recognize my humanity.
Who's your favorite radio DJ now? The answer is Cindy House. Okay, next question. Okay, this is a little controversial. What song will make you change the station every time?
Controversial. That is controversial.
Minus Four Non-Blondes, what's going on?
Do you know there's so many songs.
So many bad songs.
I mean, sometimes I listen to a bad song just to really understand why it's bad.
Oh, Mary Sue, why are you so understanding? All right, next question. This one is a good one. What is a song right now, because you know so many songs, what is a song right now that will make you turn the volume up?
It's not right now, but American Silence.
American Silence.
By Chris Pierce. Yeah.
Nice.
I want to keep listening to what he's doing in that song.
Okay, this is the last one. Where is the most beautiful place you've ever seen?
Oh, my. The roof of Norway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so there's the mountains, the big national parks in Norway, mm-hmm. and then the fjords, right? Deep, mm-hmm. deep fjords. And I have to say, Taj Mahal, I was talking with him. I said, you know, I'm a little Norwegian. And he's like, have you been to Norway? And I said, no. And he's like, you must go to Norway. And I was like, okay.
And the next day I was in Norway.
I did book shortly thereafter. He is commanding.
That's
awesome. He is commanding. Anyway, so on that trip, basically there you have to go over these mountains to get to the fjords, and the top part of the Norwegian mountain roof, they call it, there's no trees. It's like moonscape. There's glaciers, and all the birds and the native plants, they're completely different. I saw stuff there I haven't seen before.
Wow.
And it's just expansive. You lose your sense of direction. It's so expanse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Mary Sue Tuohy, congratulations on being inducted into the Folk DJ Hall of Fame. The award ceremony is tomorrow night. I hope it is a blast. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me today on Basic Folk.
Thank you. So much fun.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by me, Cindy House. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find our episodes there. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. You can check FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. Go to our website, BasicFolk.com, or you can listen wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, we suggest sharing it with a friend. Perhaps an aspiring radio DJ friend. And if you have any aspiring radio DJ friends, please introduce them to me, because I would like to get to know that person as well and know their thoughts about this episode. So send it their way. Okay, and then send them my way. Great. All right, thanks for listening all the way to the end. We appreciate you. Bye.